Cerrone Zone Radio, the award-winning view and interview show with your host, Jeff Rony. Welcome back to part two of our interview with Taylor Kent. And we're going to kind of break back in. We were talking about zombies, and here we go.
I don't know anymore. There's so many schools of thought on this. You know, you have the, you had what they created in Return of the Living Dead, which was kind of a tongue-in-cheek 80s punk version of Romero's films, where the zombies really couldn't be killed. You chop them up, and the parts come after you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It was created by this chemical compound called Triox, you know. I remember seeing that when it came out in theaters with a great punk soundtrack. And, you know, so it's really kind of complicated, and it really comes down to what do you like?
Okay.
I happen to like Shamblers. Most people really into zombies have a thing for gore. I think it's interesting to see films that make people face the idea of extinction of themselves or of their race, and that's probably where I got interested in zombies in the first place. Plus, there's kind of a weird, there's a campy scariness to zombies. It's creepy and it's campy, and yet it's still creepy and it's scary enough to go, you know, if I was really in this situation, this would be really ugly.
I remember playing the first Resident Evil game. And I was renting a room at a friend's house, and he had these long floor-to-ceiling windows along the walkway that was, you know, between the house. It was probably 3, 4, 5 feet between the house and this fence. And I swear that I could see zombies coming up to the door. You know, and it's just you play it long enough, and you kind of go, did I see something? You know.
Yep.
And, I tell you, there were many nights that I was, you know, I said extra prayers and all that kind of stuff. I was scared. I remember watching Carl Kolchak, The Night Stalker, when I was a kid. And that was, that was some of the worst costumes in the world, but it was a scary film. What did you think of that show?
The movies or the show?
The original show in 74.
Yeah. I do remember The Night Stalker and The Night Strangler was the second movie.
Yep.
And then they did the one season of the Kolchak The Night Stalker show.
Yep.
I liked it, but I've actually went back and watched the episodes since then. And yeah, they were campy, but they were kind of 70s, early 80s style.
Mm-hmm.
What made them work was Kolchak.
Yeah.
You know, the first movie was a lot more hardcore, you know, with the vampire that took itself a lot more seriously. Kolchak was still the character he was, but it took itself more seriously as a thriller and as kind of a horror film with the vampire.
Mm-hmm.
The TV show did, but if you had done it with anybody else, it wouldn't have worked.
Right.
You know, and at that point there was enough interest in kind of those oddball things that I think it worked too.
Well, and it's interesting. I don't think anybody wears seersucker, used to wear seersucker as good as Darren McGavin.
Oh yeah. I agree.
But, Vincenzo was fantastic. I think just the two were great, a great team. And then actually going back, if you're a real fan of like characters from TV shows, it is fun to kind of go back and say, oh, there's Carol Lindley and there's the guy from that weird commercial I saw. And, you know, it's just it's funny to kind of go back through all that because a lot of stars, you know, were out of work or needed something extra and they starred in these episodes. But you know, I remember that there was some good old fashioned scares, and they used some of the Hitchcock thing where you know you see the foot going up the stair and the hand on the rail, and then you cut back into where Kolchak is kind of finding a place to hide, and you see more steps, and you know it's a mind game, but it was just well done. As far as cutting it together, the music and all that. I don't know. I really enjoyed that show, and maybe it was because I think it all goes back to when you discover girls. You know, there's like this magic time in your life and just anything. It could be the almost awful music in the world. You go, oh, I thought of her when I heard that song. You know, I don't know. It's magical. But anyway, let's see. We've talked about this before. Scariest movie ever.
In my opinion?
In your opinion.
The Exorcist.
Yeah.
I don't think it's been topped.
No,
personally.
No, and why do you think it rates so high with you?
Well, when I first saw it when I was younger, the atmosphere, just the way they put the film together, the fact that they took, and I've heard interviews later with Peter Blatty and the director, the fact that they took the faith elements of it seriously. They took the religion seriously when they put it together. They didn't, you know, try to play that down. They made it a part of the film. One of the creepiest scenes for me is early in the film. It's near the start, and they show it's the archaeologist, the old Pat Priest, and he's like standing outside the ruins, and they pan, and it's really bleak, and you see one of the statues that's described in the book. And just the way they did that scene is like, and there's two dogs fighting over something in the scene, and it's just sets the tone for the whole thing.
Yeah.
There's just something, you know, when I saw it, it was just scary. And then to see, you know, Linda Blair really become this possessed thing with the limited effects they had available to them, they did an incredible job in really making her out to be this, you know, possessed.
Yeah.
And plus the acting was top notch.
Sure, sure.
But and the little things, the way they did some of the Foley effects and that, and it just kept building. And it didn't end in this happy ending way. Mm-hmm. I think that's the other thing that really got me.
If you can, look on YouTube. It might be on Daily Motion or whatever, those other sharing sites. There's a BBC special about the making of The Exorcist. It was fantastic. Incredible. They dig through everything. They talk to Blatty. They talk to all the people that were involved. Right. And when they shot the scene, Reagan was in the bed and breathing and all that, they froze that room. They had like, it was all closed up, and they had an air conditioner blowing in there. I mean, it was, you know, whatever below. It was cold. And
it looked like it, yeah.
And I mean, it was hardcore, real deal. And when the guy fell down the stairs, they had to coat the stairs in this rubber thing. I don't want to tell you the whole thing, but it's just it was an amazing special to kind of go through. And they said the guy there's a guy that did the sound effects for a Spanish film. And I think he was a peasant guy, very meager, but he did a lot of the effects for The Exorcist with a wallet that he just kind of crunched into the microphone. And he knew sounds, you know, and he knew how to use anything to get certain sounds. And, you know, the woman that did the voice of the demon, devil, I guess, in the film, that's what it is a woman got off the wagon, got sloshed, ate eggs, smoked, you know, and but she got into the character. It's a fascinating special. And, you know,
I'll check that out.
It really is good. And, you know, a lot of Christians really obvious reasons kind of shy away from it. Say, oh, that's no, you don't want to see that. Listen, I watch that thing in the daytime, scares me to death. I watch it with the sound off, scares me to death. So there is an element of fantastic filmmaking, great acting, great effects, great music and sound effects, but there is this element of truth in it. Now,
right,
my agnostic brothers and sisters just definitely disagree with me. That's okay. They're not listening anyway, so I have no fear of that. But there is that element of something so evil taking over something so cherubic, a little girl.
Right.
And it's a classic kind of a story dichotomy that really brought it in, and just the fear of that. The look, I don't agree with some of the Catholic teaching, but I'll tell you what, they got more guts than me. Run in there and go toe to toe with this, you know. Right. I give them props, definitely. But they talk specifically about that final scene, and one of the guys, I think it was a writer, says, you know, I hated the way you ended the film because it made it look like the devil won. And the director turned and looked and goes, that's not how I see it at all. You know, and they had this really deep discussion about, no, it was just da 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 da. And but I always felt like the devil got off scot-free. But if you read this book called The Bible, he gets it in the end. And so it's just he's just kind of buying his time. But that's the one thing that did bother me, is that he just kind of basically leapt out the window and, you know, kind of scampered off, right. You know, after the death of the guy or whatever. But I think that film, I think The Omen was another one. What did you think of The Omen?
I've now actually seen the remake and the original.
Let's not talk about the remake. Let's talk about the original.
You know, when I saw the original, I was pretty young, and I don't think I appreciated it as much for what it was. In all honesty, there were some creepy parts, and I think that it was well put together, but I don't remember it all that well, and I haven't really gone back to rewatch it. It didn't strike me in the same way,
right,
that The Exorcist did. Maybe, yeah, I can't remember when it came out and how old I was and all that, but... it was creepy in many respects, especially from the concept of the little kid is the one causing all this problems to go on.
You right.
know? And the tricycle scene, of course.
Sure. I remember watching a special about the making of – I watch just about every making of thing I think there is. Let's see. Who's calling me? Hold on. Hello? Sure.
Hi, Eddie.
Hi, I'm interviewing Taylor right now.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I'm on my way home.
Okay, I'll see you in a bit.
Okay.
All right, bye. It's all about real life, people. So, I remember, I think Richard Donner sat down with a writer and said, I have an idea. And the writer goes, yeah, what do you got? He goes, the Antichrist is born now. And, you know, he's a son of a high official in, you know, whatever. And the guy goes, wow. And the guy went straight home, wrote all night long, and came up with The Omen. I mean, it was just that. That's all he said. Mm-hmm. And I guess kind of what I'm getting at, I don't want to go off on a full rant, but I'm saying I think two of the most powerful films about some of the realities of the Bible were made by people that probably aren't Christian, possibly, at all. And yet those are the films, for sure, you know, the Exorcist showing the power of, you know, the devil possessing someone, you know, and then in the other extreme, you know, the Antichrist coming back into the world. You know, and look, I got to hand it to them. They did a better job than anything we've done thus far, you know.
Oh, yeah. No argument there.
On a level with that. But you've seen a lot of movies. As far as, you know, sci-fi and horror, and are movies getting better now with the effects and all, or worse?
Well, that's a hard question to answer. I'm a story guy when it comes right down to it. The Exorcist, for all the extra stuff it had with great filmmaking, had a great story. Even The Omen had a great story underneath it all.
Right.
You know? And let's face it, you know, they made three sequels to The Omen and have remade it.
Right.
You know, it obviously had something going for it in popular culture, let alone, you know. And there's talk of redoing The Exorcist, but I don't see the point in that. Although they did re-release that crappy, let's add the extra footage version that doesn't need to be there, that didn't get received very well.
Right.
But nonetheless, what was your question again? are films getting better?
Yes.
In mainstream Hollywood, I would say no, in all honesty. I think that Hollywood is always seems to take the shortcut. They, instead of spending the money for good writing and good acting, they spend the money on special effects. That doesn't mean there aren't good actors out there or that there aren't good writers out there. We still get a few good films that these days. But it's not – maybe it's because they're making more films and I'm we have more access to them, that I'm more aware of how many bad ones there are than I was growing up. Or maybe it's just the films aren't as good. I tend to think they're not as good. They focus more on special effects. In the horror arena, they tend to focus a lot more on the gore. Not to say that there wasn't gore. You know, even the early Romero films were gory, but – there was still story. There was still a fair amount of story and some characters you could actually get interested in the early films, which they've lost in some of the remakes. In independent films, I think we're actually seeing a renaissance in characters and story and acting. Mm-hmm. I actually watched a film. I got a Roku box so I can watch my Netflix on-demand stuff on my TV, which I love.
Oh.
And I watched a... in an independent film channel film called The Last Winter that had Ron Perlman in it, who I am rapidly being convinced is probably the most talented man in Hollywood today.
Wow.
And he plays – it's all about an oil executive – or they're drilling in the Anwar – or the protected part of Alaska because we need the oil. It gets passed and – they go up there and all this weird stuff starts happening. It's kind of this supernatural thriller with an ecological twist. And Perlman plays kind of the guy trying to hold this whole thing together. And it's just a really good film that uses special effects to make the film better.
Hmm.
It had a good story. It had interesting characters. There's a message underneath, but they don't really beat you over the head with it. And it's well acted, and where the effects are, you're like, okay, that's appropriate. It doesn't mess up the film versus, you know, what are most of the big spectacles we had? The Transformers sequel has come out, you know, which is all special effects for all intents and purposes.
Right.
The Star Trek film will be heavy special effects. I've actually heard it's good. I have not seen it yet. And I don't know what to think of some of the other blockbusters, but in all honesty, I think that more and more filmmakers are, as they get to the big time, are taking shortcuts with special effects rather than spending time making better movies, at least in the genre films.
Yeah.
I don't watch a lot of, I guess, chick flicks or more straight dramas. I will admit I have not even seen Snark Dog Millionaire yet.
Okay.
You know, I plan to.
Right.
It's a film I want to see. It's
right.
Just, you know, not the kind of film I generally rush out to see, you know.
Right.
And those may be really good. And I've seen a lot of films from overseas. I've seen films from India. Japan probably has the corner on good horror right now, in my opinion. Yeah, they can get really gory, but at the same time, they really understand how to make something creepy.
Right.
And how to use that, and it's something we've lost. You know, I didn't get a chance to go see A Haunting in Connecticut, which I wanted to see,
mm-hmm.
Which I guess is based on a true story. And I heard it was okay, you know. But I went to Horror Fest this year, and I've gone to the two of the three Horror Fest events in theaters, which if you listen to my show, you've heard my opinion of that. A lot of the films there ended up taking shortcuts. They weren't innovative. One of their big films that they were pushing called Autopsy was all based on one special effect throughout the rest, and you didn't care about any of the characters, and the story was stupid.
Mm.
You know, so I guess I think they're going downhill. But again, as more and more people, you know, as technology becomes more and more available to us, you know, we can produce pretty high quality audio and video with just a standard computer these days.
Right.
Without too much extra equipment, you know, digital cameras are getting cheaper and cheaper. I think we're going to see more and more high quality stuff being made independently. That's going to get recognized.
I totally agree. Let's kind of come in for a landing. Let's kind of pull this all together. And what's interesting is we were talking, and you mentioned that you became saved, you met Jesus, and
right,
that changed the course in your life.
Yep.
And then we kind of took this tour, and I think we've talked about things that most Christians wouldn't talk about, much less think about, much less be involved in.
Right.
And I did a short walk and talk about changing the face of Christianity. As a matter of fact, I think changing the face of groups like Christians or Republicans or Democrats or whatever. There's this mold, and I think the molds are going to be broken pretty quick. And the one thing I really, really like about you is you're real. You're a Christian who loves horror. You're a Christian who loves sci-fi, but you're a Christian nonetheless. And right. We've kind of discussed this, and I really want to tell you not only to keep going, but also that it's important because you know, there's so many different movies that we've seen that are just junk, mm-hmm. that are Christian, quote unquote. And, you know, why don't you kind of talk about your hopes for Christians in the realm of podcasting and entertainment? Kind of talk to that.
One of the reasons I got into this in the first place, one of the ideas that it hit me was the back in 2005, there was a big push on this whole viral marketing thing. It was kind of a new thing going on. And I saw these cool ads that people would put together that were funny and interesting, and you'd show them to all your friends because they were cool, but they were selling a product, right? And I said, well, why aren't we and this is kind of where it started. Why aren't we doing this as Christians? Why aren't we taking these cool technologies that ultimately God created through people, right?
Right.
And using them for his glory and to get his message across and to be fun and to be interesting instead of basically saying, well, you know, we'll just turn over all the cool stuff to the devil and we'll be boring and we'll sit in our bunkers and, you know, we'll just let the world steamroll our point of view. Not that we should be out there necessarily pounding on people with our point of view either. That's not what I'm saying. But why aren't we using these tools that are becoming rapidly available to everybody?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I early shows I talked about that and getting outside of the box and that kind of stuff. And I'm still passionate about that to some degree. I think there's a lot more people talking about it now. Which is good. There needs to be. You know, there's the Jesus Geek talking about ways you can use technology in the church and geeks and God and things like that. My hope is that the church will realize that they are not it. Okay, mm-hmm. That they are not God. They are not Jesus. And they are not the ones saving people. That they are simply all of us as Christians are really simply the diplomats or the messengers.
Right.
You know, our whole job ultimately when it comes right down to it is to point the way. Okay. Don't come worship me. Jesus is over there.
Yeah.
You know, and I admit I'm not the greatest at that. I don't think any of us are.
No.
You know, am I as loving as I could be? No. You know, and I think the church has lost its way in the sense that they are so focused on knowledge that they've lost everything else.
That's right.
I heard a great sermon by, oh, I cannot think of his name. He's the pastor, or he was the pastor at the Mosaic Church in California.
I know somebody that goes there. Okay.
Okay. And he did a sermon on discipleship. He came, I was going to Woodland Hills Church at the time, and he came out and he spoke. And he was talking about discipleship, and he was talking about his experience with talking to people about discipleship and how discipleship has really become literally just memorizing the Bible.
Hmm.
And his point was that disciples are God-taught. You know, the original disciples, Jesus was with them. Jesus is still with us. Maybe he's not in the same form that we've seen, i.e. we can't always see him, touch him, hang out with him, stuff, because he's ascended. But he's still here, and he's still teaching those of us who are interested.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I have nothing against the Bible or anything else, but I think we've turned the Bible into our Savior.
Hmm.
My hope is that the church will get it, ultimately. I talked a lot about this in the past, and I've kind of not talked about it for a while because, well, frankly, I'm kind of burned out on talking about it. It's the same things over and over. We see the same things over and over, you know. We, in a lot of ways, are seeing the same things that Luther saw when he, you know, called for Reformation, you know. We're seeing huge mega churches that are gobbling up money from people left and right, just like the Catholic Church was, and wasting it. I would love to see more churches taking the money they're given and instead of building palaces to house their flocks, to actually go out in communities and make a difference with it and help people with it and show the love in tangible ways. And that's not to say we got to throw the gospel away to go out there and do social good, which a lot of people believe there's a trade-off there. There isn't. You can do both. You're doing it in the name of Jesus.
Right.
You know, but go out and do it. And don't be afraid to say why you're doing it. That's, I think, the thing that a lot of people lose. But do we need more palaces? Do we need more cult of personality churches? You know?
Well, I just want to say I appreciate you for being courageous enough to say that. I know you've taken a lot of hits on that. And I want to say that some of that is being done out there. I've seen some of it. And but I also am very I think the Reformation is coming, and I think that we just need God to kind of reset the economic situation. Oh, I think He did. I think He did. And I think that things that are eternally important and not monetarily important,
right,
that's going to change the landscape. And I think if we are going to see this end time, you know, influx of people coming into the knowledge and walking in the biblical values and knowing who God is and trusting Him and all that, is I think we're going to see it now. And I think money has really got nothing to do with it. And right. But I'm very encouraged because, you know, I think we all felt this way. And imagine if you talk to Dave and Jesus Geek and everybody else, they say, did you kind of feel like you were the only one? I think everyone would go, yeah, I thought I was. And I'm finding more of us that are really embracing the internet, taking our faith, and not just with our mouth and with our 140 characters, just blabbing and preaching and all that. But I think we're taking our lives and showing, not telling, showing. And that's cool. Now that's Jesus. You know, and I'm very, very encouraged that we're everywhere. And, so I just want to say it's just really cool to know you, to be your friend, and to just kind of see, you know, what's happening with you. I think it's cool that, you know, you're kind of walking around in a convention, putting a mic up to some, you know, guy who's doing a drawing a comic book. He probably, you know, he would just want somebody to come up and sign something, and you actually put him on the air. You put them on the internet, and I think it's really cool that you do that. I know it takes a lot of time away from your family and all that, but you know, I just want to say I appreciate what you do.
Thank you. I mean, you know, you're doing podcasting. It gets lonely out here.
Mm-hmm. I know.
we don't get a lot of feedback, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I'll take whatever I can get. And I, you know, Jeff, you're doing some great stuff out there too with New World Army and bringing Roni's Zone back and doing all the cool Star Wars stuff you've done in the past. And, you know, in a way, it's interesting because you seem to be moving more towards the interviews and the talking to people and talking about issues. And I actually feel like it's time to move more into more of the entertainment realm of things.
Okay.
And do stories, you know, like I did at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And have more – do more entertaining.
Yeah.
With some values in it. Not that I ever have gone out of my way to do anything so it could be labeled Christian.
Right.
Well, okay, maybe at first, when I first started podcasting. I will admit, my show carries an explicit tag. Don't let that turn you off if you're hearing this. When I first put that on there, it was a marketing gimmick. I fully admit that. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it's explicit. I'm going to go listen to this show and hear some Christian stuff. And
yeah.
Later, I said, well, this is to protect the Christians from points of view that they don't want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. So,
well,
yeah. Oh, cool.
Well, I just want to say this really quick. Just the extra scenes I've added for New World Army 11 are going to change the playing field. So I don't know. I better send out defibrillators to people because this is not. This ain't your grandma's sci-fi thing. I mean, anyway, I had to make some decisions about the direction of the story, and I decided to just go with it. And I'm frankly a little nervous, but I know when I'm nervous, it's a good thing, but it's different. So,
right.
Cool. But anyway, it's been really cool to talk to you and just kind of get to know more about, you know, Taylor and how he gets the snarky Avenger going. And I really appreciate you, and I wanted to just take some time and introduce you to the 400 people that listen to my show. So anyway, thanks so much for your time, man.
Thank you. I really had fun, and I really appreciate what you're doing.
You got it. All right, take care.
You too.
And that ends part two of our great interview with Taylor Kent. He's got a lot of things going on, and also he has a lot of varied interest, and Taylor's a great guy. So hope you enjoyed the interview. Make sure that you check out his show, and come on back and check out my show too. We'll see you. Bye. Thank you for listening to Roni's Own Radio. Please visit our website at jrdonline.com and drop us an email at jeff.roni@gmail.com. Thank you very much, and see you next time on Roni's Own Radio.